And welcome in into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How about you guys?
Doing wonderful. I'm in your seat today because the plug in my seat doesn't work, so I've switched things up on you.
Oh, okay. Well, don't change the settings.
I'll try not to.
I know, I had the other mic on for you, Robbie, for a second. I was like, whoa, I got to switch this up. Also, Joe, you're lucky you didn't have to venture out into the absolute tundra this morning. I'm not. The groundhog yesterday, which we didn't even mention Groundhog Day, 6 more weeks of winter, so that sucks.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty upset at that groundhog, I'll just tell you. That groundhog and I usually don't get along very well. Not a big fan.
Did you see that, like, I think in some other country, which apparently also does Groundhog Day, the groundhog was found dead?
No, I did not see that.
I'm pretty sure this happened.
That took a dark turn.
Yeah, I know. So what does that mean? Like, 8 more years of winter? I mean, like, winter?
Don't even put that into the universe, Joe.
That is not good. Fair point.
Not good. But yes, it is very cold this morning, and it's going to be very cold again tomorrow morning. But then we're going to have a couple of days in the 60s. That'd be nice. Anytime you can get in the 60s in February, I'll take it. We got a lot to get to on the program here today. Charles Robinson will join us today, as he confirmed on Twitter last night. A little mix-up with Charles this week, but he'll join us today from 7 to 7:30. So looking forward to that conversation. Got a lot to get to with him. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, joining the show at 8 o'clock as well. So looking forward to all that. Joe? We begin, though, on a column that you came out with a couple of days ago at The Athletic on the Nashville Predators. And the title of the column is, quote, "Predators need more than a meeting to save this disappointing season." And a lot has been made of the meeting after the St. Louis game a couple of weeks ago. The Predators had the meeting. We've talked about the role that Ryan Johansson played in that meeting and what the results have looked like since then. They've won 3 games in a row since then. Including games and wins against 3 pretty good teams in the standings. And now, due to the bye week / all-star break, which, by the way, all-star weekend in the NHL is this weekend, due to that being the case, the Predators have not played since then. But you came out with a very interesting piece at The Athletic, kind of highlighting everything that's gone on into this Predators season, the role that the meeting has played, the discussion around the meeting, and how, as they move forward here, it's going to take a whole lot more than that to get this team consistently kicked into gear.
Yeah, well, you know, basically I just felt like I had to write about the meeting. It's sort of one, I think it's almost like a prerequisite if you're going to be in journalism. If a team that you cover has some kind of meeting, then you got to make a big deal out of the meeting. You got to ask about the meeting. You got to talk about the meeting. You got to write about the meeting.
Yes.
So I just fulfilled my duties. Real fast, I would like to just point out, it is Quebec's groundhog, Fred LaMarmotte. Did die. Okay. So I'm not crazy. Sorry, Fred. Apologies to Quebec. You were going to have like all kinds of winter anyway, but yeah, rest in peace, Fred. The meeting, I just, of course, the last game I covered, good win for them to cap a good week and ask some questions about the meeting. We talked some about it last week. Some of the quotes in the column were from, you know, from that post game, but also, you know, talking to some people, got the sense that Johansson got a lot of credit for that, right? But I also think that there was a, you know, I guess I'm trying to think of the right term, not maybe a gentle call out of people, I think, including Matt Duchene. Yep. You know, I mean, I think that that's and look, yeah, I mean, it was needed, you know. It was needed for Johansson to call himself out. It was needed for guys to be honest with each other and say, we need you to do this a little bit more. We need you to do this a little bit more, to talk to the coaches, you know, give us a shot on the power play. I mean, there's a lot that went into it. But I think what it comes down to is, you know, this team will go through good stretches and we'll see what happens from here. I mean, hey, if they can sustain that, they're going to be in good shape.
Yep.
You know, they're not just going to get into the playoffs. They're getting into the playoffs, I would say, you know, somewhat comfortably, and they're going to have a chance to do something in it. But I have my doubts that that's what they're going to do, because I think they have to play. They have to like almost play with desperation to be as good as maybe they think they are, if that makes sense, or as good as I, you know, maybe we thought they would be this year. Like, it's just when you have, you don't have great players. They have two great players, but when you have like a lot of good players, well, then in this league on a nightly basis, if you don't bring the absolute max, you know, passion and all that, then you're not going to win enough. So I don't know if I, you know, I don't know if I verbalized it very well, but it's the first segment of the show.
No, you did. I think it makes a lot of sense. And one thing that I brought up in the immediate aftermath of that meeting and that what we've talked about, I think it was that next Monday or Tuesday when we were talking about the game, was, okay, they've played well, they've responded well. At that time, it was in the LA game, and then they followed it through the rest of the week against Winnipeg and New Jersey. So that's great, obviously. I mean, obviously you want to see them respond after something like that. But the question that I brought up, and that the more I thought about, I continue to be bothered by, quite frankly, with this group, is why does it feel like it always takes something like that, or, you know, some comments in the middle of the season, after the season, being exposed in the expansion draft, whatever you want to throw out there. Like, why does it take something to kick them into gear and get them going on a consistent basis? It seems like there's always something different we could point to. Like last year, what did we talk about, right? Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene had bounce back years, especially in the case of Matt Duchene. And we talked about, well, how much of this was they got, both of them got exposed in the expansion draft. There was a pride thing that went into that. They wanted to show people that, hey, we can still do this. Hey, we can still play. And they did. Ryan Johansson was really good last year, and Matt Duchene was excellent last year. There's no question about it. Okay, then, so you showed them. Well, why has that stopped? Like, why does it take a meeting 40-some-odd games through the season for that message to sink back in? That's the part of this that I don't really understand.
Well, see, what I think it is, I think one, I guess, way to explain it in my mind is, you know, look, it's 82 games. I mean, I don't think you'll find any team out there that brings it for 82 games. In a season like that, you're going to have your down nights. But, you know, if you're a team that has better players, you know, or more great players or whatever, you can navigate that and still get some wins and, you know, still have some success without your absolute best. The Preds aren't good enough, you know. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Like, they're not good enough. I mean, it's not fair to expect, I don't think, anyone to always be bringing it, you know, but when the Preds don't, then they, you know, then they just, I don't think they're good enough. And it's like, you know, and look, as we know, look at the Titans, you know, like, pro athletes are always trying to find some way that they've been wronged, you know, some edge, because it's like, man, it can make, I mean, it's important. You know, your opponents are always looking for it too. And I just think it's like these good surges they have are when they really get after it. But the reality of this team is, I think, mediocrity.
I hear you, but the two guys I'm really focusing on are Johansson and Duchene, and we saw them do it for an entire season last year. I mean, they did do it. So why can't that be the case more often? I'm not saying Duchene putting up 43 is gonna be what it takes. I fully understood heading into the year that was not going to happen. But like Johansson, too often this year, I feel like has been just invisible out there. And, you know, maybe invisible is too strong of a word, but he's not making an impact on the game like we saw him do at times last year. And at times, it just feels like the same old conversation with these two. Now, look, I think Johansson's on, or excuse me, Duchene's on pace for like 65 points or something like that. So it's going to end up being, if he continues at this pace, like pretty much where he's always been in his career, other than last year. So maybe that just is what it is. I don't know. But it just feels like with those two specifically, we're always having a conversation like this to some degree, other than last year.
No question. And I think as time goes on, as they get older, first of all, it becomes like you got to really bring it, right? And it might be longer gaps where you're not as effective. But also, I do think the power play is a big part of the answer there.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just, I think if the power play is just a, I mean, if you really have to point, I know it's easier to just point at an individual or two, or, you know, again, have the Poyle Hines conversation, which has always happened, has gotten old, but I mean, it's always there. But I mean, if I'm pointing at one thing, it's like, look at the difference in what that did for them last year and what it's not doing for them this year. But no, you're right. I mean, those two guys, obviously, and Johansson, I mean, Duchesne's, like, I agree. I still feel like Duchesne this year has looked like Duchesne a fair amount of the time and has been dangerous, and, you know, and it hasn't gone in as much and all that. I think since he and Hines kind of figured it out at the very end of the 2021 season, like, there's, you know, there's been a, like, he's been a guy you want on the ice, right? I
Of
mean,
course, yeah.
he's been Johansson. It's in a long, long story with him. Going back to, I guess, really probably the 2018-19 season, right? Is when it really first started to, because I think the year before that, he probably had his best year as a pro,
Agreed.
and looked like he was, you know, in a pretty kind of short list of not great player, but like a really strong number one centerman in the league. And so I mean, I think with him, there's whatever, maybe there's different factors off the ice or whatever it is. I don't know, but it's look, I mean, it probably is a good thing that he's the one who kind of took command of this thing. And if they get him locked in and just full blast the rest of the way, then that probably does bode well for them.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Your reaction to what we've discussed here regarding Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchesne. And we'll get into a little bit of my idea on the Predators heading into the NHL trading deadline, which when they come back, by the way, NHL trading deadline is a month from today. So something to keep in mind on that front as well. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Joe, we are 1 month away from the day of the NHL trading deadline in the National Hockey League. It's All-Star Weekend down in sunny Florida, so I hope all the NHL All-Stars are enjoying the sun down there. The Predators will be back in action coming up on Tuesday. So February the 7th, they're back in action taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, a team that, as you look at the standings, is in front of them in the Western Conference, and a team that also is dealing with some injury problems. And maybe you put your scopes on if you're the Predators to think that maybe that's one of the teams that you could track down as the playoff race starts to get interesting in the Western Conference. But again, Joe, 1 month away from the NHL trading deadline. And we were on Preds Insiders the other night, myself and Nick Kieser. And one of the things we talked about was the NHL trading deadline and what the strategy should be for the Predators. Now, albeit there is still a month left, there's a lot of hockey to be played. There is more information about this group that we will know by the time the deadline comes around. Having said that, I put this out there the other night, and I stand by it this morning. There is not a scenario, to me, in my opinion, where the Predators should be a buyer this year. It just, that scenario to me does not exist. And I know that they could go on a run here, and they could find themselves in a playoff spot by the time the deadline rolls around. I don't really care. I there's not a scenario to me where they should be a buyer. They're up against it cap-wise. You know, they've been buyers frequently over the course of the past 5, 6, 7 years as they've gone through this run. You know, they made the trade to go get Jeremy Lozon last year that cost a second round pick. We've talked extensively about that. Like, to me, if I'm the general manager, my strategy this year is, all right, well, you guys need to show me something, and if you do, I'll leave you together. I won't sell off anybody, and maybe we'll bring up Philip Tomasino and see what this group can do. And if you don't, I'm going to start selling off some people. Like, that's my strategy if I'm the general manager. the idea of the Predators being a buyer at the deadline this year, based on what we've seen for basically a calendar year to this point and the inconsistency that's come with it, that scenario to me should not exist.
Well, I agree. I mean, basically, look, I mean, if you could get a great player, and it would, you know, if you could get a great forward, like a really high-level forward, and plenty of teams would like to do that. But like you said, first of all, how does that even work with considering where you are with the cap? How would you manage to pull that off? I mean, you've invested in this team being better than last year. You invested with Nino Niederreiter, with Ryan McDonough. And it's almost like you have to tell yourself, I mean, ultimately, like, okay, it's on you guys, right? Like if you're David Poyle, it's like, okay, this team was put together. They got to do it. And you've got to just think about not giving away futures, right? I mean, look, we talked about, like, Mike Collin, but, I mean, we also talked the other day about the Scott Wheeler, the fact they got the, you know, according to him, 10th best pool of prospects in the NHL. I mean, I was surprised to see that, frankly. And that's a pretty significant uptick from the last couple of years, the view of their farm system. But I mean, hey, that's good. They do have some, I think, some at least good players, right, who are potentially on the way. But this is not the time to be giving away futures to me. Like, you're in that spot and it's like you've invested enough in this team. It should be a playoff team. If it isn't, like you said, if they do go the other way when they come back from the break, then yeah, I mean, I think you should be thinking seller. I still have my doubts that David Poyle will.
Well, one thing that for sure I think would be – it would cause the fan base to lose their mind more than some of them already have. And I don't think this will happen. But, like, if David Poyle – like, if they get to the trade deadline and the Predators are, like, 4 or 5 points out of a playoff spot and David Poyle tries to go add to then bring in a player that helps them get in the playoffs, like, that to me would be just a horrendous mistake. Like, I think it's time – if you're Poyle, and he said something with Chase a couple of weeks ago in his sit-down interview on Chase and Michelle that kind of made me think he's starting to think this way. Like, if you're David Poyle, there comes a point where beyond all the Poyle-Hines stuff that we've talked about ad nauseum here with their jobs, like, there comes a point where you're him, where you've got to take a look around and say, all right, how much damage do we think this team can do in the playoffs? Like, is it a round? Is it getting to the Western Conference Final, which is hard for me to get there for this group? Certainly, is it getting to, you know, a place where you compete for a Stanley Cup? I just don't see that with this group. And I think if everybody's being honest with themselves, it's hard to see that if you're anybody, regardless of if you're me, if you're somebody in the organization, if you're David Poyle. So, like, if that's the case, at some point, like, you gotta quit giving up future assets to go chase a cup with a team that I think everybody knows probably is not built to win right now. I mean, Elliot Friedman was on with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace yesterday, and he was talking about it. He's like, you know, I don't think the Predators should be buyers this year. They don't feel like a Stanley Cup contender. And if you don't feel like a Stanley Cup contender, you don't need to be buying this year at the deadline. I could not agree more with what Friedman had to say yesterday.
Yeah, Poyle needs to be like Norman Dale, you know, in Hoosiers, you know. My team is on the floor. Yes. My team is on the floor. You know what? Go do it. If you guys do it, again, I absolutely can't dismiss the you don't know what's going to happen in this tournament thing. Certainly can't dismiss the idea that a team with a goalie of this quality could be dangerous. So that's fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what are you going to add that's going to even make a difference? Again, and Poyle kind of said this to us on the show, and that's kind of how I looked at it. I remember thinking this would be the case with Tolvanen 5 years ago, which is funny to think about now. But Tomasino could essentially be a sort of like trading deadline acquisition. If they actually do bring him up, I mean, you know, he's starting to become this mythical creature who doesn't really exist. But
it's like the Loch Ness Monster.
That's a possibility. Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, yeah, Jared needs to go find the Loch Ness Monster. You didn't hear Jared and Jared versus Joe the other day.
But, I did not.
He made a Bigfoot reference about the cap. I'm like, that's good. Like, you and Caroline should actually go find the Loch Ness Monster since you guys think the cap is fake. But anyway,
yes.
I digress.
Well, the most intriguing part about the deadline to me, beyond the, you know, are the Predators going to be a buyer, a seller, standing pat, all that stuff. You know, we've talked about it. They're at a place on their blue line where it's at an interesting spot moving forward. You know, you went and got McDonough. You got Ekholm under contract. You got Carrier and Fabreau in their situations where both of them are going to need new deals after this year. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do something right now. Like, you don't have to do it at the deadline because both Carrier and Fabreau are restricted free agents. But I've said it 1,000 times. There's no way to me that both of them are back next year. It just doesn't make any sense to do that. So if you're David Poile, depending on how this next month goes, are you looking around and shopping Dante Fabreau? Do you wait to do that this summer? Do you choose a different route? And also keep in mind, like, Carrier's hurt right now, and who knows exactly when he'll be back when they come back after the break here. Like, on defense, what do you decide to do if you're Poile? I mean, you've got McDonough, who, by the way, I think is playing really well right now. I think he's settled in, and he and Yossi are playing well together on that top pairing. You've got him locked down, and he's going to be here. Like, if there's interest for him, do you entertain that if you're the Predators out here? There's a lot of things on their blue line based on some of the moves that they've made and the moves that I think they're going to have to choose from as they move forward here that are intriguing to me about the Predators. And David Poile, whether it's now or in the summer, I think is going to have to make a decision on that front.
Yeah, is it possible? And I've seen the McDonough thing brought up. I'd be very surprised.
Unless
it's total disaster situation over here. They come back and it's just, you know, they're just losing left and right. But, yeah, I mean, the Fabreau thing, is it possible anybody out there is intrigued by him and thinks of him as actually somebody who could be an asset around the deadline, and that could up the value a little bit of the what you could get for him, whatever that would be.
Yep.
You know, what would it be? I know we've talked about this. Third-round pick? Am I being too rich there? Is that
for Fabreau?
Rich?
I think it may be a little rich.
Fourth-round pick?
Well, it just depends. I mean, look, I've said this before. Not all deadlines are created equal. I mean, Jeremy Lozon got a second-round pick last year. So, I mean.
Well, that is true.
I mean.
If that happened.
If that happens, who knows? Maybe Fabreau could get a second-round pick. I have no idea. But I would say third.
Make up for the Lozon trade.
That would make up for the Lozon trade. 615-737-1025. We got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll do that coming up next. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators, and we'll get into an NFL thought I have as well. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Friday morning. We'll have the best and worst things in sports coming up at 6:45. We'll go ahead and take your submissions on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Charles Robinson joining the program from 7 to 7:30. Lots to get into with him as well, so looking forward to that. Terry from Clarksville on the text line says, Robbie, what do the Predators need in order to be competitive for a cup? This from Terry from Clarksville on the text line. And Joe, if that isn't the million-dollar question with this team, I don't know what is, because there's several different thought processes on that. I mean, right now, I don't think that they're overly close to being a Stanley Cup contender. I mean, I think that if everything's clicking with this group, I think they're a good team. Now, what does that mean? Could they win a round in the playoffs? Yeah, I think they probably could if everything's clicking and, you know, you've got Saros healthy and guys are playing well. Yeah, I think they could do that. I understand that some people are going to say, well, it's the NHL playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, anything can happen. I get that. I've seen countless examples of that. I'm just going by the odds. Like, what do they need to be a true, legitimate Stanley Cup contender? And quite frankly, like, with the group they've got right now and the core right now, Joe, I just don't know if you can get there. And that's what leads to all the conversations we've had for almost a calendar year at this point about this group, which is, which direction are they going? Is it time for a rebuild? How do you stockpile more young talent? And really, at the end of the day, you know, you look around the rest of the league, Joe, and whether it's Braden Point or Steven Stamkos or in the extreme cases of McDavid and Crosby, like, you got to be great down the middle. You got to be great down the middle. And, you know, McKinnon obviously is in Colorado. There's more than just Nathan McKinnon as to why they won the Stanley Cup a year ago. But pretty much for the most part, as you look back through Stanley Cup champions over the course of the past 10, 15, 20 years, most of them have great players down the middle. And I think the Predators have good players down the middle. They do not have great players down the middle. And when you don't have that, it's hard to win on a consistent basis in the playoffs.
Yeah, and look, it's funny because the column you referenced that I wrote for The Athletic about him this week, I just during a break previously, I was in the comments with the circular argument, someone in there saying the only way that they can be good is to completely basically blow it up and be terrible. And it's, again, then the answer to that is, okay, you can do that, but you may not luck out, hit the lottery in that particular time period, and then you could be bad for a long time,
yep,
which I don't think there's any appetite for that at all. And also, there are examples of teams that have kind of gone through ups and downs and have been a certain level. And let's look at Boston, you know, the difference being Boston's core is great players,
right?
That's the problem. But I mean, to me, the quick answer is, okay, so there are some promising players, right? Young players, which is good. Kemmel, Evangelista, you know, like, I think there's some potential here in the next few years for there to be some good players. Are any of them going to be great players? I don't know. I mean, I think the answer is probably going to be to trade a goalie. And then you're going to have to get a haul. But I think so. I mean, I think you're going to have to – that's one thing you have. I mean, how many franchises have two goalies? Now, again, we don't know exactly what Askarov is going to be.
Right.
But he is a prospect who could be a great goaltender. And Saros is a great goaltender. How many franchises have that going for them? I mean, to me, you got to use one of them as a way to try to give yourself another great player, you know, in the forward group.
I agree. And when the time comes to make that decision, the question is, do you take the potential of what could be, or do you take what you already know is in his prime? I don't know what the answer to that is. I mean, I've thought about it. I've gone back and forth on it. You know, Saros is a great goalie. I think Saros is absolutely good enough to win a Stanley Cup with. I mean, we saw a goaltender last year that is worse than UC Saros win a Stanley Cup. Now, his team around him was great, but the idea that you have to have some elite goalie to win a Stanley Cup, I just don't buy. Now, it helps, but Saros is good enough to win a Stanley Cup. Is that the route you go with what you know that he is? I mean, by the time his contract comes up, he's still going to be 29, 30 years old and still able to play. Or do you go with Askarov and what you think he could be, which is, the more you talk to people, one of the best goaltending prospects that we've seen in a long time. So I don't know what the answer to that is, but I agree with you. Eventually, the Predators are going to have to figure out which route they want to go, because I think the other guy, whether it's Saros or Askarov that you would end up deciding to trade, I think there's too much value there and you could get too much back to just sit on your hands and hold on to both of them. I mean, you could. I don't think that would be the right way to do it. So the Predators have a lot of questions to face as they come back. They'll be back on the ice coming up on Tuesday, February the 7th, taking on the Vegas Golden Knights. And then, as I said, 1 month from today is the NHL trading deadline. So it's going to come up pretty quickly that time around. Joe, you got another thought?
Yeah, just, you know, when you look at the numbers, too. So basically, two guys you know are going to be here is Forsberg and Josi. I mean, you're talking about Josi through 28, Forsberg through 30, and there's probably going to be some pain, you know, in the latter years of those contracts. You hope with Forsberg, like, it gets better than this year, like next, you know, like, but you hope there's some really good years. I think Josi's still a great player, of course. But, I mean, Johansson, his contract's up in 25, same with Granlund, and then Duchesne in 26. I also think some of the answer here could be another buyout potentially. Maybe two, but probably not two, but maybe another buyout, which wouldn't be, and I know, you know, they bought out, of course, Kyle Turris a couple of years ago, paying him to not play for him.
Yep.
But that is something to keep in mind that, you know, I mean, Johan, you know, it's not eternal. You know, Forsberg and Yossi, they are going to be part of your core. But some of these other guys, it doesn't have to be for too long. And so then again, that could kind of be in tandem with maybe moving a goalie, some of these young guys coming on. I mean, I don't think it has to be utter barren, blow it up dead zone for the Preds to be good again if terrific, fantastic choices are made.
Right. Right. And that's the caveat. If. Yeah, it's a big if, yeah. But you're right. Like if that happens, then you can turn things around, and we've seen that happen before in the NHL. Joe, there's something you brought up a couple of weeks ago that is, I guess it was probably last week, that I heard it, I heard you discuss it, and I thought to myself, there's no way that the NFL could really be considering this, right? Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me, and I think you agreed with it. And I'm scrolling around this morning, and SI.com has come out with a piece about how the NFL, if they're seriously considering making conference championship games at a neutral site, which it appears like they're at least talking about it, that they're going to have to come to the decision that with players and fans, this is going to be deeply unpopular, is the column that SI.com has come out with this morning. So, you know, it's one of those things where when you first brought it up, I thought surely the NFL couldn't be that dumb and realize that maybe making a little bit more money on a neutral site game, is that really going to drive them to get rid of home field advantage for a conference championship game? I'm still hoping that common sense prevails. But, Joe, this conversation is continuing to happen with another piece from SI.com coming out this morning.
Can you tell me who wrote that piece?
I have to pull it back up. My computer is spazzing out on me right now. But, yes, I will. I will find it okay. For you.
Joe wants to call him out and yell at him.
Well, it's funny because there is going to be some calling out of SI.com today on the program.
Oh, boy.
And this is the problem with when you say SI.com. You know, they have their core, you know, people who work for Sports Illustrated, and they have all these sites they farmed out, right?
It is Mitch Goldich.
Yeah, okay. I don't know who that is, but it's okay. Well, that doesn't mean yeah. Okay, I guess he does work for MMQB. Okay, all right, that's fine. Because the problem with when you say SI.com, it's like all these they have the Maven thing if you remember, sure. And so sometimes so for example there was a I believe there was a piece recently by one of those sites that's, you know, basically affiliated with SI.com that I think took seriously the macro dosing thing that Arian Foster did this week.
Oh, really?
Which is Michelle's favorite show. Michelle and Ryan from Chicago.
Oh, yes.
And whoever is not familiar with that, Arian Foster said, yeah, you know, we get a script in our locker, and this is what's going to happen in the season. And then all these NFL players are like, wow. Really, I didn't see this script where I broke my leg. That sucks. Yeah.
No, but some people really thought that was real.
Like, oh, yeah.
Because it was only the clip.
A terrifying number, yes.
That's terrifying. And he clearly, oh, gosh. Sarcasm, people. Sarcasm.
Yeah, like I saw like a tweet from him because there were, it may have been to this column, but, you know, that was like, oh, this is ridiculous. And I was like, yeah, man. Okay, calm down. But he had like the crying, laughing emoji, you know, quote tweeting people who were like, who took it seriously. But anyway, there's an example of why you got to, you know, when you say SI.com, you got to, you know, see what's going on. So now I'm trying to figure, I still don't think this is real. Now, someone was asked this week. And I forget who, but someone in the NFL was asked about this, and it probably is around the Pro Bowl media availability. And the answer was, like, this is not a new thing. Like, they've discussed it.
Right.
So that's worrisome that they even acknowledge that and that they have actually thought seriously about it. I mean, that's it's already worse than I thought, than it worse than I hoped. I still fully do not at all believe that this is going to be a real thing. It makes no sense to screw over teams who, when we're so used to the absolute importance of trying to get that last game on your home field. And like you said, I mean, it's to make some more money. I mean, it's not like it's some, it's not going to help the TV situation at all. You know, and that's really what the money is, right? I don't think it's real.
Well, I mean, how much more money could it really be? I mean, that's the question, right? Like, it couldn't be on the grand scope of NFL money. Maybe it is more money. I would have a hard time believing it's like significant enough more money to deal with the backlash that you would get from making a decision like that.
Exactly. It's not at all worth it. I mean, you may, and the thing is, talk about atmospheres, because you know they were excited. And this is where people saw them put out the press release. Look, we've sold 50,000 tickets. Okay, but that's not always going to necessarily be the case either. You know?
Yeah.
You know you're going to have a full stadium for the home team in that game. That's if they go down this road, it's just boneheaded. Like I haven't seen, like you said, it's a drop in the bucket when you talk about tickets. I mean, it's I don't so. It's kind of disappointing that it continues to be discussed, but man, I don't think it's going to get to any serious level. I hope not.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That is next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad, would you like to kick us off with your best and worst things in the world of sports?
I would, and you know how I love to, to do like kind of the same sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, This is a little bit of a stretch, but it's all Vanderbilt related, okay? Best and worst.
Okay.
So best, I have actually a couple. First of all, John Ingram, who of course has given a lot of money to a lot of things, gives $500,000. It's a matching gift to the Anchor Impact Fund. So there's a new. There is a new collective for Vanderbilt, and this one is very much tied to community service and charity work. And so you now have two legit collectives, which is interesting to see these multiple collectives. And I honestly would not have necessarily guessed this for Vanderbilt, but they've got two. Again, the Anchor Collective, which we've talked some about, and I wrote about The Athletic. Former Vanderbilt receiver Jason Burns and what they're doing, and now you have the Anchor Impact Fund, $500,000 from John Ingram. And again, it's a matching gift for people to try to get it to $1 million. So first of all, I like what they're trying to do with it, but also look, this is what you've got to do. We got a new round this week of schools trying to put the guardrails on things, which is to me hilarious.
Yeah,
and we'll just see where it goes, but I think good for Vanderbilt. Another thing good on the good best this week in sports, our friend of the show and close friend of mine for a long time, Jamel Hill, was in town, which allowed Katie and I to act like college kids this week a little bit. But she spoke for a Black History Month event at Vanderbilt, and Candace Lee, I did not know, would be the moderator, was fantastic. It was an amazing event at Vanderbilt, and for anybody who wants an incredible story, read Jamel's book, Uphill, one of the best books I've read in a long time, and she is a hero of mine. And also on the worst, let's flip that around, because Candace tweeted about Jamel, and she had a picture of her and Jamel together, and said a great time, and then I looked at the mentions on the tweet, And they were all, when are you firing Stackhouse? because that is where things are. Worst in sports. Well, first of all, 101-44, certainly that loss. Boy. And then just where things are, you know, with Stackhouse in that program. You know, he talked yesterday, and I think there's a little – look, I have no idea. We always try to get into this, right? It's like, who, like, how many people really feel this way? Is it just a vocal few? And that's kind of what he said yesterday. He also used the term scheduled loss, which people are losing their minds about in the Alabama game. Well, I talked about that yesterday. If you're going to start a walk-on and you're going to not call timeouts, you're basically like, here, we're going to eat one tonight, right?
Yeah.
It works a lot better if you're a winning program, coach, et cetera, et cetera. But people are mad about that, so we'll see how they respond tomorrow. But I don't think he's right that it's a small bit of the fan base. I don't. So all that matters really is what she thinks and what Daniel Diermeier thinks about Stackhouse's job. I think there's some critical stuff coming up here for Vanderbilt basketball. So there you go. All Vanderbilt.
I like it. Michelle Knezevic, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
I'll go right after Vandy Joe. Okay, I've got a couple quick best things in sports. Just really quickly, one of the best videos that came out, Nick Sirianni's daughter at the press conference. I mean, if you haven't seen the video, yes. I keep watching it and just laughing because it's so funny. And Sirianni's trying to be just all professional. And he's like, kids, look forward. And Taylor's like, and then da, 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 da. And she's like mocking him. It's just so funny. And actually, AJ Brown quoted it and was like, Taylor, Dad, you've already practiced this so many times at home, like as to what she would have said. So that's really funny if you see that. Also, I don't know if you guys saw this. Mike Wright is transferring to Mississippi State, former Vanderbilt quarterback. So we saw him, you know, put on a performance, get them a couple wins over my Kentucky Wildcats this year. So great that he's getting another opportunity. And then quickly, Vince Ferrara had a tweet just from the Senior Bowl, and it was just about Hendon Hooker, and he's obviously there. He's got his knee brace on. You know, still recovering from that ACL tear, but just looks super engaged in all these drills. And he quoted like a back and forth between Riddick and just a couple other guys saying, you know, like Hendon Hooker so engaged, it'd be so easy for him just to like sit on the couch. But just awesome to see him there and trying to be a part of the drills as much as possible. And then my worst thing in sports is Tom Brady retiring. I feel like, you know, a lot of his success happened when I couldn't really appreciate it before I worked in sports and covered the NFL like I am now. And watching the man in the arena and all that he has done, we probably will never see somebody do what he's done. You know, amount of Super Bowls in New England and then going down to Tampa. And just pretty awesome to, you know, see his career like that. And pretty sad, though, to see it end. So, there we go. In sports.
Well, my best thing in sports, I'll take it a different route, is Brady. It's not the fact that he's retiring, but it's just his career. Like, you get to celebrate the career of one of the greatest athletes that we've ever seen. It's been cool to watch some of the videos come out this week. Teddy Bruschi told a fun story the other day on ESPN about him. It's just been fun to watch that. So, again, I actually believe him this time. So I'm going to assume this is the final time we'll go through the Tom Brady retirement tour. So I'll give it my best thing in sports to celebrate the career of Joe Rexroad's favorite football player of all time, Tom Brady. So that's my best thing in sports for this week. I'll be honest with you, it was hard for me to decide on my worst things in sports because there's a couple of different ways that I could go. I mean, it's All-Star Weekend in the NHL, and it's the Pro Bowl game. So I feel like one of those two should automatically get it because – I can't stand All-Star games really of any kind in professional sports. The Grizzlies are 1-7 in their past 8 games after we started talking about how good they are, so maybe we deserve a worst in sports after that. But I think I'm settling on the Brock Purdy injury for this reason. I think it's going to ruin a lot of the quarterback drama this offseason. I think there could have been some quarterback drama with Trey Lance, and with Purdy being out, I just think Trey Lance is going to stay there. You know, Aaron Rodgers was mic'd up yesterday at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and he said, well, I'm not going to San Francisco when asked if he could break any news. So he said that. So I just feel like the Brock Purdy injury, and I think the Niners are going to hold on to Trey Lance. I think that limits some of the quarterback movement. on top of Brady retiring. So I was excited about what the quarterback movement could be this offseason. I'm slightly less excited now. My worst thing in sports.
I need to throw in one more best. Mike Francesa correctly diagnosing, you know, Peyton Manning is the best regular season quarterback. Joe Montana is the best Super Bowl quarterback. So, yeah, I don't know with Brady, whatever. Actually, I didn't actually hear that. I just saw the tweet, and I'm like, oh, that Mike Francesa. Let me tell you something.
Oh, boy. John on the text line says, the worst is a toss-up between Joe Mixon and Dylan Brooks. That guy is a clown. The best is Jimmy G, the only remaining quarterback in the NFL with multiple rings. This is from John on the text line.
Okay.
Did you see the brawl that Dylan Brooks started last night with Donovan Mitchell? It was quite something.
No, I haven't. I haven't actually seen it. I've seen a lot of reaction to it. I haven't seen it yet.
It was.
Dylan Brooks is quite a combo of can be dirty and also the most astounding flopping you'll ever see in a basketball player.
I feel bad for the photographers.
Soccer players get jealous about Dylan Brooks.
Let's just say that there was maybe a hit on the midsection that could have started the whole thing last night.
It
was not great. Not great to watch. And not the first time in the last couple of weeks that Dylan Brooks has been connected to a scuffle on the side. This time Shannon Sharp wasn't coming out of the stand, so that's good.
Yeah, at least he's not trying to beat up old men sitting around the side of the court. So we're making progress, Dylan.
We'll take your thoughts, your best and worst things in sports throughout the show. 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Lots to get to in the world of the NFL. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.